and welcome back to Radio 74. I am Mario the Artisan Rogue. Today, I wanted to talk a bit about this whole issue that's been popping up on Twitter and some other places. And what I'm talking about is the casting choice for Ariel, the Little Mermaid. Now, for anyone that hasn't been captured up in this whole upswell of like complaining and weirdness that's been happening online, this is something I just wanted to talk about because it's not specifically about The Little Mermaid. Now, the whole thing, if you don't know anything about this and you've been under a rock or just haven't decided to engage in any of this, is that everyone's up in arms because the new actress, I believe her name is Halle Bailey. So not Halle Berry, but Halle Bailey. She's an African-American actress, and she's going to be portraying the new live-action version of Ariel. So there's been all kinds of crazy comments made out there like, you know, black people don't have red hair, or why are we doing this, and what would happen if we did a biopic about Oprah Winfrey and decided to, like, you know, cast Glenn Close or something along that line. So there's been a lot of the, you know, ridiculous, knee-jerk sort of thing that happens in this sort of scenario. But I wanted to go beyond that. And the only reason I'm doing that is because I made it a point that I wasn't going to talk about this sort of stuff. Because I'm not a fan of these live action, what are essentially remakes, not even reboots per se. I know they changed some things back and forth. Beauty and the Beast and some of the other ones had differences from the Disney animated versions that had come out before. And that's fine. I mean, let's face it, the House of Mouse is all about money for the most part. Yes, they are an incredible creative company. There's a lot of things that come out of that. I mean, I work part-time at Hallmark. I see these things. I've seen product from it. I understand, but at the end of the day, it's how much money can we get out of the consumer? And that's just capitalism, and it is what it is. You know, I'm not here to debate that aspect of it today. But what I will talk about is something that I do see permeating every single time something like this happens in popular culture. Now, I want to go back a little bit on this, and I think I first actually started noticing this probably way back. I think for me, the genesis of seeing this was with Star Wars Episode 1, and then 2, and then 3. Now, for anyone that knows anything about that, you know that there's something of a division that has happened there. And again, it's happened once more with these newest movies, 7, 8, and now 9, that will be coming out more than likely, where there's people that start yelling the familiar phrase of, "I can't believe you're ruining my childhood." I can't think of a singular thing that I've heard on the internet or seen repeated so many times in memes and just statements in general that talk about this. And it's ridiculous to me. Now, this is simply my own opinion. I'm not sitting here saying that this is the be-all end-all. I'm not sitting here saying that I have a hill that I want to die on. But I certainly want to discuss this while we're sitting here on this hill. Because here's the thing. I've always had issues, and I've, you know, with the fact that whenever I go to, you know, comic shows or whatever, any sort of pop culture event, I could go to a comic store and you'll see these sort of things erupt forward. People get into discussions about whether or not somebody is, well, you know, I didn't like this particular artist on this comic book. I didn't like this particular actor in this role. But there's always this sort of thing where you're going to get the naysayers. You're going to get people. You're never going to please everyone all of the time. That's just not going to happen. And I know that most major media corporations that create this content know that. Your average YouTuber understands that. You just have to travel through the comments section on any channel and you'll see that on any one video. So that being said, the one term, you know, where they're ruining their childhood, in a nutshell, I can answer this really quickly. I'm standing here in my studio and I'm going to say it this way. I've got all kinds of stuff down here. To anyone that's ever seen any pictures of my studio on my YouTube channel or anything else like that, I've got everything from Transformers to a Nintendo GameCube to old Legos to a Stormtrooper helmet, all kinds of things. Stuff that goes all the way back to the 70s, if not earlier, all the way up to now. I have gone through all kinds of things, like, you know, the relaunching and cancellation times of Futurama. The new Star Wars movies that have come out, the animated series that they did for them, you know, even whenever, you know, just every single one of us can relate to some aspect where something like that has either been redone, rebooted, brought back for some reason. And for certain fandoms that I have a particular interest in, one of them being anything having to do with Masters of the Universe, He-Man and the Masters of the Universe, for those of you that don't know what I'm talking about. There was a very polarizing thing that happened where there was what I believe to be a very successful re-envisioning of the She-Ra universe. Now, this is a very much a standalone universe that doesn't incorporate Prince Adam or Randor or any of that lineage or any of that side. This specifically went with She-Ra and her alter, Adora's alter ego, She-Ra. God, look at that. I probably need to drink a little bit more water. And so it went with that. And so, and it turns out that, after watching it and giving it a chance, I actually like it. It's very kiddie. It's very Steven Universe. It has that sort of Amerimanga sort of look to the overall animation, which is done excellently. The humor and the writing is spot on. The voice actors are impeccably well chosen for the roles that they're doing in that. And I didn't find any real issues with it because, guess what? It wasn't aimed at my demographic. But this is something that seems to have completely missed a lot of my colleagues and a lot of people that I've known in these groups that, are fellow collectors and hobbyists and aficionados of the Masters of the Universe. For a lot of them, they look at the older 80s, series that came out with She-Ra, where when you compare the two, that one is drawn in a specific style by Filmation, and it's very realistic and it's done in a certain way, and I dare say it a little hypersexualized. Now, this one is more akin to, like I said, Steven Universe, and has a much more toned down and much more lower key sort of aesthetic that isn't, it's something that is a sign of the times. It's still bright and flashy and fun, but it's, for the lack of a better term, a little bit more politically correct. And I would probably say better. And the reason I'm saying that is because there isn't as much objectification in the character design or these other things. Now, again, simply my own opinion, okay? But because of that, a lot of these guys that are probably about my age, if not far older, are complaining, saying that their childhood has been ruined by seeing this. Now, this is this exact same thing that I heard with Star Wars, same thing I've heard with all these other fandoms that have come and gone. I've heard that like left and right. I'm not even a Doctor Who fan, and I hear that because there's a huge division. For any of you that are Doctor Who fans, you can probably more than likely back me up on this, where there seems to be divisions on like even the newest series compared to like the other more recent ones, and then going all the way back to the originals that were in black and white and that sort of thing. And there's been a lot of actors that have portrayed the Doctor, but I don't understand why it's so hard for people to wrap their heads around the fact that, just as I was saying earlier, I've got all these things in my studio here. Now, these are things I've owned over the years and, from my G.I. Joes to other things, works of art, whatever. And a really good example of that is I have some books and some art reproductions from, the Hildebrandt brothers of The Lord of the Rings. And just because Peter Jackson came along with Weta and decided to do an updated version of The Lord of the Rings, an amazing version of it that I love a lot, it doesn't take away from the things that I own. It didn't, the book didn't suddenly disappear. The artwork didn't suddenly burst into flame. My G.I. Joes didn't completely crumble to dust. Nothing I own, no memory of mine was eradicated by the fact that somebody else decided to come along and do a newer or different version. Let's not even say a better version. Let's just say their own interpretation. Now, what I find so ironic about this is that the exact same people that might go so far as to say my childhood is ruined by this are the exact same sort of people, and I've seen this because I do Artist Alley and that sort of thing, that crave as much fan art as they can possibly get for characters that they love. Nostalgia is strong. There is a complete industry based on this factor right now. And so, that being said, I don't understand the dichotomy that's happening there. I just don't get it. On one side, they're mad because, why would you do this? Why would you make She-Ra this young girl that's opinionated and strong and all these other things and doesn't look like this over-sexualized icon that I grew up with and I possibly crash-landed into puberty with? Because things change. Because, we're not that demographic anymore because things happen. And the exact same thing is what is going on here. And it seems like every week there is a brand new bit of this crazy outrage. And I was always somebody that was a little bit resistant to the idea that the media would try and cash in on this sort of thing. But the truth is that if you read enough headlines and the weird things that are supposed to pass for news now, and I'm not even complaining about like the legitimate news outlets. I'm not going all hashtag fake news on you. I'm saying just about anyone that has a blog can say, my opinion matters, and what I'm saying is that people are polarized, and they're taking either their own input and view on this, or maybe a little absconded sort of like zone of this minority of people that may be really angry about something, and they're blowing it up and making it bigger. They're generally, you know, making clickbait sort of articles and or videos that, you know, you get into and you're just pissed about it. And I don't understand that. Like, one of the few things growing up that I had was the ability to be able to be reclusive and sink back into fandoms, whatever they were. And you see all kinds of things that can go wrong. And I'll be the first one to say that, like, there's plenty of fandoms that I've grown tired of over the years that I've, you know, have grown long in the tooth, or I've just worn out, or I just didn't like the directions they went in. A really good example of that is Warhammer Fantasy. I am not a fan. For those of you out there that don't know what I'm talking about, it's a tabletop miniature game and a role-playing game and all these other things, or it was at one point. And I was very fond of it. I always played Dark Elves. I still have a gigantic 10,000-point army halfway painted up. But in the newest rendition of it, it's now been called something. It's now changed to Age of Sigmar. And the world has been kind of deviated from, rebooted, completely redone. And it's much less miniatures, probably more expensive to play. The whole point is the fact that, you know, the company had to evolve, because that particular facet, as much as I enjoyed it, was not a moneymaker for them. And this is something that happens in a lot of other things. They're going to look at the newest and youngest and strongest demographics that are going to work for their sales, for their movie attendance, for their toy sales in general. And that's what will be catered to. Now, there are companies out there, like Mattel tried doing it with the He-Man line, where whenever they, you know, the original ones were like those 5-inch tall, overly muscular, the original ones that just about everyone's seen at some toy box in their life at some point when they were younger, especially if they were born in the 70s or 80s. And then they went to a line called He-Man, Master of the Universe Classics. And so it was a much taller figure and points of articulation, incredible paint jobs. And, you know, it was all subscription-based and was very much, and even on the packaging, it says made for the adult collector. Now, the thing is that, and I find this ironic, you know, I mean, succinctly, Mattel went after the adult collector, which was a limited number of people. And early on, I know that there were some problems with either distribution or the quality or certain things like that. And then there were even characters that were made that, you know, fans had demanded, but not everyone liked. And then you were locked into a subscription where, you know, they were trying to keep it affordable so that the people that really wanted it could get it. But hey, look, you know, support Mattel, because this is something with limited, you know, ability to sell in the stores. And so, you know, I always find it to be a very strange thing when fans will get mad about stuff like that, because at some point you have to understand that if you don't wholeheartedly at least support the ideology behind a fandom, it will go away. Things do disappear. If you don't believe me, think about every single 80s cartoon that you know of, okay? Now, most of us will be able to, you know, give callbacks to certain 80s and 90s, you know, stalwart sort of things like, you know, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and He-Man and the Master of the Universe and Transformers and maybe even something like GoBots, G.I. Joe, Thundercats. I mean, those are kind of the big names that come up. But then there's other ones from Saturday morning cartoons that don't necessarily come up as often, whether that's Smurfs or the Mighty Orbots or Jason the Wheeled Warriors or one of my personal favorites, Bravestar. There's a ton of these things that at one point in time did have toy lines, did have cartoons, did have some support. But because fans back then didn't really latch onto them, or one reason or another, they just didn't proliferate beyond that. Now, when that happens, there's nothing much you really can do about that. I mean, there's, you know, if you grow up and you're a creative, I'm starting to see it in the independent toy circuit where people are creating toys, limited run things, all this other stuff for hard-nosed, hardcore collectors. And that's wonderful. It's an amazing time to be alive to see this sort of thing happening with the advent of 3D printing technology, the capacity to share knowledge and tools and tutorials and techniques on YouTube and Vimeo and all these other places. It's crazy. I mean, and I've invested in some of these one-offs and things like that because I want these artists to know that I, you know, appreciate this thing. In fact, the other day I was looking for some, I was looking for anything that had to do with Laser Tag Academy, which was the cartoon that was based on the Worlds of Wonder Laser Tag, you know, toy line, which is, you know, for those of you that aren't familiar, was, you know, Laser Tag, which was like these, you know, black handheld pistols that were called Starlights. It wore a starlight sensor. They had a helmet, the whole shebang. And so I was looking for stuff on that and I realized, oh my God, aside from like a thermos, a lunchbox, a couple of Trapper Keepers, and maybe some sleepwear and some curtains, there isn't a lot of product out there for that. But I did happen to stumble across a guy's work on Etsy, which I rarely go to, but I was like, you know, I'm going to give it a shot and see if there's anything out there. One guy, one artist managed to actually have it. Now, if I'm hoping everything goes well and I manage to get it, if I do, then I'll certainly, you know, after I get a chance to look at it, maybe do a little review of that. I've thought about doing some of that stuff, like focusing and featuring on these artists that create these sort of things on these, well, now hyper obscure sort of, you know, intellectual properties. But he had white and black versions of the Starlight pistol. And that was a huge thing for me growing up. I used to play laser tag all the time. I love the cartoon. I love the concept of it. It was fairly, you know, fill in the blank kind of, you know, sort of sci-fi, but it was still fun and it was lighthearted, you know, and it was, I think, created by Hanna-Barbera as well, too. So it had that going for it. But at the end of the day, the point is that even with all that stuff, I still try to find the positive and the good to focus on, because ultimately, when we complain, things can go horribly wrong. A really good example of that is this. Going back to the Masters of the Universe, because this is, that's a fandom that I've seen so many things go right and wrong with. When Mattel kind of got burned out because they, you know, they would try and make things and, you know, things would go wrong. Fans would complain. They would yell. They would besmirch them. All these other things would just go horribly wrong. And so, you know, for the most part, I think it was a success. But then inevitably and eventually, another company, Super 7, came in and ended up getting the license to do Masters of the Universe from Mattel, which was a little strange. And the quality on those, you know, toys haven't been up to par. But for anybody that knows Super 7, which, you know, I don't know their total connection with Funko. I'm not really sure if they're like a subsidiary or what exactly, but the whole point is that they, you know, they make a lot of unique toys and they, I mean, they've got a lot of different licenses that they work with. And in general, they try and make toys that you probably wouldn't, you know, get much of a chance to see. And that's interesting in and of itself. But there's still a lot of fans that get upset about that thing and talk about, again, you're ruining my childhood. I just don't understand that. These are people that, you know, they've got to make a living. They've got to earn money. And they're trying to sell you something. And they're probably doing the best they possibly can. And maybe that's just me being optimistic. I mean, another really good example of this where I was like, and I think that was the thing that actually jettisoned me into wanting to do this podcast about this. I had supported a game called Shenmue, and this is the third chapter of it, or the third in the series. And it was produced by, the game was created for the initial version of it was back in 1997 or 99, something like that. Now, my dates are kind of fuzzy. But Shenmue was one of the very first. In fact, it's kind of hard to categorize it. I mean, you can make comparisons to, like, you know, to games like, oh, man, I'm trying to think. It's the one where you drive around and you beat people up and everything else like that. I keep wanting to say San Andreas. I know that's one of them. But Grand Theft Auto. And then some other free world-based games like that. Now, if you play the game, it's fairly archaic now, but it's still a lot of fun. It has a huge nostalgia draw. It's basically about a character named Ryu, whose father is murdered. You know, the game takes place in the 80s, has a lot of those tropes, but it happens in Japan. And it was a technical marvel for when it came out. Now, fast forward some, and then the sequel came out, not on the Dreamcast, but on the Xbox. Shenmue 2 is what that one was called. And then there were many more chapters after that. Well, not until 2 years ago, I believe that's how long the Kickstarter's been since, they had announced that they were going to make the third chapter. And everyone was just completely happy with it, with the idea that this was happening and they couldn't believe it. Tears were shed. Sega channels were going nuts about it and all these other sort of things were happening. And I'm not going to lie. I was ecstatic. I was like, I can't believe I'm actually going to see more of the story of Ryu and where he's going after I had managed to complete most of Shenmue 2. I didn't have an Xbox, so I only got intermittent times to be able to play it. So I got all excited. I went back and I bought both versions, 1 and 2, on Steam recently, and I've been playing through them. All these other things in huge anticipation for this. Now, whenever the Kickstarter started and they got it funded, they had all these extra levels, all these things. Long story short, it was a massive undertaking, and they did manage to get the funding for it. It was insane. It was incredible. Now, there was a whole bunch of this crazy hubbub that popped up that had to do with what platform it was going to be released on. And I can't remember the name of the one that it was going to be released on now. I think it's Epic Games or something like that. And not Steam. I guess Epic ended up with a year's exclusive grab on it. And there were a lot of people that just to read the comment section on Kickstarter, there's always that little thing that says, please keep your comments considerate and nice or whatever. It's not even happening. I mean, people were even changing their usernames to FU Suzuki and just in general, horrible things. And, from my standpoint, it's really disappointing to see a fandom do that. But I'm beginning to see a lot more of that toxic aspect coming out. The really crazy part about it is at the exact same time, you can have this wonderful world where you can record and do and release all these things online. You have just as many people that are able to do the exact same thing in tandem right back to you, whether that be rude comments, or whatever. But it's always behind a opaque wall of anonymity that exists on the internet. And we know this. If you're anybody that's been on the internet, you understand this is what happens. But the fact of the matter is that it seems that the more people get online and the more people get out there, the more they expect to be catered to. Now, I am not going to lie. I didn't end up supporting this Kickstarter. I did, but it was on a really low tier. It wasn't anything where I was going to be getting the game. I think it was just a free wallpaper one or something, but I definitely believed in it and I wanted to at least put a little bit of money into it. I think I was unemployed at that time whenever that happened. So I was a little sketchy and dodgy on the income, but I still wanted to help. Okay. So that's where it went. And then over time it turned out that, they were needing money and they were doing all these other things. And, ultimately, Kickstarter is an investment platform. There has always been this caveat that has been tried to have been explained to many people that get involved with this. I knew pretty damn well that I could put my money in on this, and there was very little I could do if they decided to just completely up and fold. That happened with other Kickstarters I've been involved with, just a few, one or two in general, but nothing that really pissed me off too much. But, I didn't also invest a whole bunch of money in Kickstarters. I usually wait until a product is released afterward, and I'll put a little bit of money up front. But in this case, people were mad because they were promised Steam keys or physical copies of the PC. Now, I've gone back through and I've read what I can of it, and it does seem like, Yu Suzuki and his company Wise did make, promises that they were going to do a physical PC release. And I believe it's coming out on the PS4 as well, too. And that was where it was left at. But again, they kept, and most of their updates, they would say, there's every chance that, that anything needed to play the game was going to change. This is a game in development, so things could happen. And I imagine that the publisher probably wanted a little bit of a monetary boost because of the money that was being invested to make sure this was going to work. I mean, think about that. This is a game that hadn't had a chapter released for it, and I think damn near, 16 years or something? If that much. I mean, it's just nuts to think that we were getting a sequel. And to see all of this work that was being put into it was just stunning. But ultimately, in the end, you had people that were complaining in the middle of this that their childhood was ruined, that they had waited so long, that they had put so much trust in Yu Suzuki to do this. Now, I would wager to bet that the majority of the people that were complaining don't even have the slightest modicum of understanding as to what the hell was going through this man's head as he's trying to get this massive game launched, this massive game created, voiced, everything. It just, I can't even begin to understand what's going on with that. And it's amazing because I know that I've had criticisms leveled at me and, in my own way, at Artist Alley, I've had people that have said, oh, I could do this, or, well, what if you did this instead? Or, yes, it's kind of cool, but, I've never had anything really rude said to me to my face online has been a little bit different, but I guess the thing I'm, when it all comes down to it, I guess the thing I really wonder is, when did we, as a whole, because I'm not trying to put everyone into this, but I do wonder if we're not all, in some way, little minutiae here and there, part of the problem. When did we get to the point to where the only kind of gratification that we really liked was the instant one? And I really mean that, because it seems like between things like, you know, everyday life, like, you know, well, Amazon, we're going to order this and it'll be here the next day or as soon as possible, whatever that is, to digital downloads, whatever that might be, we're used to getting something so quickly and usually the way we want it. Preferences, saved, all these other sorts of things, you know, make your iOS work the way you want, this sort of thing. You know, they give you some capacity to be able to do certain things that'll make you feel good in how you have certain things set up and delivered to you. Now, that's starting to happen with other stuff. And I understand, like, the most recent and obvious version of this was the design for Sonic the Hedgehog in what was supposed to be an upcoming movie about Sonic the Hedgehog. They had released the trailer. And yeah, I'll admit, when I first saw it, I'm like, what the hell? Because I saw it and I was like, you know, the only thing I really like about this is Jim Carrey as Dr. Robotnik. The design of Sonic the Hedgehog left a lot in my desires. I was like, this looks like some really creepy furry cosplay. It did not look right. And I have nothing against furries or cosplay. I don't. But that design was just very strange for me to take in. And so supposedly, you know, the director or whoever the powers might be that were involved decided to go back. And they're like, you know what? Let's put the brakes on this and let's redo this because this just isn't working. And so then the next thing that got released was this graphic that showed Sonic's hand and then, you know, moved to, I think, February 2021, I think, is when the next release date is. Could be wrong on that. This is going off memory right now. But sometimes, you know, there was a little bit of me that said, you know, it's cool that they listen, but it's also kind of surprising because in years past, they would have just completely ignored whatever people were saying and pulled a Michael Bay and just been like, you're going to love it. I know the Transformers all look like insects now, but you're going to love it. It is what it is. And, you know, so that's kind of the world we live in now. And I guess maybe I'm just old fashioned. Maybe I'm just having some problems adjusting to this, but it does seem a little bit sensationalistic to make big deals about things like this. Now, I get it. I understand that people say that that it can swing both ways and it can be too extreme. I understand that. I do appreciate one comment that was made by this wonderful Twitch streamer I follow. Her name is Gothic's Model. She had made a comment that she actually didn't give a damn that much about the character being updated, as she put it, I guess. And I'm paraphrasing here. I don't have her tweet in front of me. She wasn't that concerned and really had wished that we had left Ariel the Little Mermaid as a white redhead. And at first, I was really puzzled by her words. Now, she is an African-American lady, and that has really nothing to do with it except for the fact that, you know, quite stupidly, I, you know, had my own assumptions on why she might be saying this. But then I was really surprised, pleasantly so, by what she said, in that maybe Hollywood should be spending more time creating more original stories and different stories that have people of color and of other creeds and ideologies and stuff like that, so that way we don't really have to worry about retreading the same damn stories and just updating everything to cash in on the exact same thing we've seen before. And that was probably one of the most profound things that I've been pulling out of this, is that it's not even so much the issue about ruining childhood as much as it is maybe there is a little bit of truth to that, only in the respect that I didn't realize how much of a true retread was really happening, you know, that there was really that much of an issue with it. I get it. I see the reboots. I mean, I just have to go look at the history of the X-Men films and I can see that happening right there in front of my eyes. So I get it. I understand that is something that is happening and it doesn't seem to be showing any signs of going away. But I guess I hadn't really thought about that, you know? And at the exact same time, I guess it's because I live in this duality nature where I do shows where I try and present my own original characters and worlds and stuff like that. But the truth be told is I still have people come up to me and go, yeah, but did you draw Captain America? Do you have any Mega Man? Oh, man, I would totally buy something off you if you drew Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And because I didn't have any of that stuff, I didn't make a sale. So in my head, I'm thinking, well, people just want more of the same old crap. I mean, why would they want anything else? They don't. It doesn't seem to be that way anyway. And this isn't knocking anyone that's bought artwork from me. I don't mean it that way. I'm simply stating that the reality of the matter is that only in the last year or two have I really been able to push forward my own stuff, but very much at the loss of not being one that wants to retread what's already been done by other people. And that was just more of a thing I wanted to do for myself to see if even anyone was interested in what I was making. But then when you get to, you know, things like this and the greater voice that you experience when you're on YouTube or anywhere, especially Twitter, and you're seeing that people are complaining like, well, why isn't there anything new coming out? Or why don't you just leave these old characters alone and make new things? Well, which is it? You know, on one side, it's like, I don't want you to touch how certain things work for me, but at the exact same time, I'm willing to accept this. And there's always exceptions to that rule. Look at Mickey Mouse. There's a lot of different versions of Mickey Mouse. The old Steamboat Willie version all the way up to the new kind. I'm not even sure what he really looks like now. I know he's modernized and that sort of thing. And all that jazz, but you know, I mean, that's a character that nobody really said anything about. But I you know, again, non-withholding, I'm not too sure people care that much about Mickey Mouse compared to some other things. I could be wrong, but they're like, to me, I've noticed that whole little stable of characters, the original core from Disney, seem to have kind of fallen into, well, we don't really care what happens with those guys. We're talking about the Disney princesses now. So there is that. Anyway, so I'm going to leave it at that now. I needed to get that off my chest and just get that discussion out there and that sort of thing. If you guys have any kind of input or anything else like that, you can certainly find me on Twitter at The Artisan Rogue. You can also email me at mario@mariomora.net. Or if you see me at a show, I'm not exactly sure what other shows I'll be doing this year, but if you do see me at a show, please feel free to come up, talk to me, let me know what you think about this show, about my YouTube channel, about my web posts, about anything along that line. Oh, and by the way, I've got to throw this in here real quick. I do have a series on my website right now called Creative Interviews. And I'm up to 4 creative interviews right now. And I managed to cover some really, really cool people that do amazing stuff and, you know, henceforth, very creative people. But it's all based around people that are working in pop culture related concepts and ID. And so I don't want to go too much more in depth with it because of the fact that the reads are really wonderful and there's some image, you know, I got as many pictures as I could. I've been asking them to share their, you know, images with me and stuff like that. They're really informative. I had a lot of my former art students that had asked me if there was any way if I'd ever be able to interview people and do that sort of thing. And I thought, well, I could do it over, you know, video, but a lot of times I meet these people at shows or something, or I meet them online, or I you know, make some kind of connection on there. I'm like, well, this is an easy way to do it. So there's more of them lined up. I've got another one that'll be debuting next week. It's a friend of mine, actually, Brandy Miller from Dorky Dino. And then there's a few others that are in the pipeline that I got to figure out whenever I'm getting back answers and some other communication that's happening there. But I hope you enjoy that. That's under Creative Interviews on my website, theartisanrogue.com. Again, I am Mario the Artisan Rogue. Thank you so much for listening to this. And I will have another podcast out whenever I have another opportunity, possibly this next month. I've fallen behind on this, but I am definitely going to be adding more to the season. Thank you so much for listening. I almost said watching. Nobody's watching right now. I hope nobody's watching. That would be really super creepy.